Well, hey, everybody, you've joined me, Kevin Stevenson, on I Don't Care with, me, Kevin Stevenson. So today, I'm really excited about today's guest because I've got a fellow Baylor Bear on. So you always know how much I enjoy talking to a fellow Baylor Bear. But Christina Oh, who's the president of the Greater San Francisco Market for Sutter Health, is an incredibly accomplished healthcare executive. And so I just can't wait to hear her perspective on her career, her journey. But we're going to start out talking about Baylor football.
So yes, Christina, we are.
Welcome to I Don't Care. How are you?
I'm great. It's so good to see another fellow Bear.
I know. It's always good to talk to a fellow Bear. So, you know, whenever we talked before, we talked a little bit about football. And Christina, you admitted that you weren't a huge, you really didn't follow Baylor sports after you left school. And tell my audience what you said to me that the last time you were in Waco.
The last time I was in Waco was January of 2001, when we packed up my Toyota Corolla and drove north to my hometown of Ann Arbor, Michigan. So okay. That was the last time. So, I mean, you can understand Baylor's got a little better since then. Yeah. But yeah, I haven't really followed Baylor sports, but I'm super proud. And I have definitely been following some of our Baylor Olympians.
Okay.
In the Paris Olympics. So even though not all of them are playing for the USA, it's good to see the Bears represented. Yeah,
right. Okay. So before we even get at, you just tipped your hand. You said that you came to Baylor from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
I did.
Now, okay. There's a small school up there, right?
There is a tiny little school with maize and blue.
Yeah. So how'd you get to Baylor?
You know, I looked at a lot. I was afflicted with the oldest child syndrome, where I was always going to move as far away as I could from my mom and dad just to prove how, how grown up I was. And so I looked at a lot of schools in the South. I looked at SMU. I looked at Tulane. I looked at Baylor. And as soon as we set foot on the Baylor campus, I really knew that that was going to be the place for me. And I'm really glad that I chose Baylor, because it was the perfect way to, be further away from home, exercise some independence. But it was also a great place to be surrounded with people where my faith could be strengthened. And that was a really important part of choosing Baylor. I double majored in marketing and international business. So I spent a lot of time at Handkammer School of Business, the old Handkammer before.
Me too.
Yeah. And then had the opportunity to do Baylor in Japan for a year.
Okay.
And that was one of the richest experiences of my life. Actually former President Sloan and his wife at that time, when he was serving, he was over in Japan with several people, and was able to take several Baylor students out to breakfast and just spend time with us. And really glad that I chose Baylor.
That's great. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about football, because again, I gave you an assignment. You got to kind of learn a little bit more about it so we can start today's podcast. So tell me what you've learned.
I want to make sure I'm clear. I'm certainly a big football fan. I'm a Pittsburgh Steeler fan. Used to be a huge 49er fan. I know. I think you're a Cowboys fan, if I recall.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
But I actually wanted to ask, I wanted to turn the tables on you. And I wanted to ask you a couple of questions, given some of the major changes that are impacting all of athletics, but also some specific changes impacting Baylor. So I hope this is not the only time one of your interview guests has turned the tables on you.
Oh, no, not at all. Please.
I want to ask, what do you think that NIL will do to sports at Baylor?
You know, I've been really pleased with what's happened over the last, really about the last 6 months, because admittedly, we were pretty slow to the NIL game. Baylor, as you know, we have a lot of very loyal donors. But we just didn't, I think we were trying to go the Dabo Swinney Clemson route and just, think people will come to Baylor because we're Baylor, like he does over there in South Carolina. But we figured out pretty quickly after a very rough year last year that we're going to have to pay some players. And so a couple of our big donors got together and really created a mechanism to do that. And so it has worked wonders this summer. Particularly, we were able to get Daquan Finn is our quarterback, who was a two-time MAC player of the year at Toledo. Michigan wanted him. I mean, there were a number of the big programs that wanted him. We were able to get him. So he was kind of that first domino to fall from the transfer side. But looking at the recruits that we've had in the upcoming two classes, they're just amazing. And some of the local media guys who've been covering Baylor sports for years said this has been the best month of recruiting that Baylor's ever had. And so
I had to laugh. Yeah. I follow Baylor Athletics on social. And over the weekend, I saw that at the practice, you saw the T-shirts where we pay players.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, that's a great way to advertise it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned you looked at SMU. And, of course, you know, I'm old enough to remember the old, you know, the death penalty up there. Everybody's doing what SMU did, you know, back 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, they, like I said, they got the death penalty and were in the football doldrums for even longer than we were for their while you were here. But I think NIL is really, it's not only helping out in football, obviously basketball. We've got an amazing class coming in and we're in the mix for the number one player in 2026 because of NIL. And because of Scott Drew's culture of joy.
Yes, absolutely.
But even baseball, I mean, it's in tennis, in volleyball, and I'm hearing, you know, about Acro and Tumbling, our 9-time consecutive national champion Acro and Tumbling team. So NIL has made a huge difference here once we finally realized that we had to go that route to really compete.
So then tell me your thoughts about the Big 12 becoming the Big 16 and our new partners in the conference.
You know, I'm really excited about the four corner schools, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, and Arizona State, because they all bring just great aspects to the conference. I mean, Arizona State, a huge alumni base. I mean, just a massive alumni base and really quality sports. Arizona, of course, in basketball. Football is up right now, and their baseball program has always been great. Colorado, well, let's just say bringing Deion Sanders is going to be kind of colorful.
A little prime time, never hurt anybody.
Prime
right?
time, bring that in. But and Utah, the same thing. Utah, whenever they left the WAC and went to the Pac-12, my gosh, they've done some great things there. And so, you know, and I'm really excited that I got my Utah and Colorado tickets just this morning, and one of my buddies and I are heading out to both of those games in September. Can't wait for that because, of course, been to Salt Lake City and Denver many times and Boulder, but going there for a football game, it's going to be really incredible.
You know, I have to tell you, one of my favorite Baylor memories, when I was at Baylor, actually my sophomore year, Baylor played Michigan at home. Mm-hmm. In Ann Arbor. And that was a great, that was just great to be able to travel home and spend time with my friends. Of course, I was wearing Baylor Bears gear. Don't worry. But, I read an article over the weekend too, that talked about just the joy of competition in NCAA football and mm-hmm. the importance of being able to go to a game and feel like it's competitive. And I read that in the Big 12 has the highest percentage of games that were determined by one score.
Yeah.
So that's what we want. I mean, we want to win, but we want it to be a good game.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've been to some of those blowout games on either side, and it's not fun. You know,
it's especially really not fun if you're on the bad side of that scoreboard.
Oh, exactly. When, you know, I lived in Nebraska, 20 some odd years ago, and we went to a Husker Baylor game in Lincoln. At halftime, we were down, I think it was 55-0 at the half.
Ooh.
And I was there with my father-in-law, diehard Baylor fan, never left a game. He looked at me and goes, let's go.
It's time.
It's time to go. But yeah, it's going to be a fun fall and a fun winter with basketball, both men's and women's too. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And you need to get back to Waco.
I do.
You need to see McLean Stadium and you need to see the new Foster Pavilion. Both of them are palaces. So
I have to say it's really made me proud to see not just how Baylor athletics have done, but just how Baylor as an institution and how Waco has really made their name in the state and in the nation. So I do need to get back and I need to visit you.
You do. And you know, thanks to Chip and Joe for a lot of that too.
That's right. That's right.
So let's get to healthcare. Why not?
Sure.
Tell me, I love your story. You got to share with my audience. Tell me how you got into healthcare.
So I actually started, I mentioned my graduation from Baylor. I actually started in a place I didn't think I was going to start in. I started in medical sales. Mm-hmm. And through that, I met my husband on a blind date. A physician that I worked with set my husband and I up. Okay. And at that time, I was living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and my husband was living in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And when we decided to get married, I knew Steve was not moving to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So Steve grew up in Knoxville, so he wanted to stay in the Southeast. And so I moved there to Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. And my first job in a hospital was as a physician recruiter. I remember seeing the job posted. I'd been in sales and I was like, well, I know how to talk doctors into doing things they might not want to do. So I had the opportunity to start with Tenet Healthcare on Hilton Head Island as a physician recruiter.
Tough place to start, huh?
It was, people think it would be easy to recruit physicians to Hilton Head. And it was, except for the point that a lot of physicians that were looking at jobs were like, I want to see patients from, like noon to four, and I want to golf in the morning or golf in the afternoon. Right. But that was great because I knew from the very first day that I worked inside a hospital that that was where I belonged. And my dad had told me from the time I graduated, I'd really struggled to feel like I'd found my niche. And it was such a joy because I really felt like I'd found the place that I belonged. I was fortunate because as my time with Tenet went on, I was fortunate to get to know some leaders that really just were willing to sponsor me and mentor me, give me tough love when I needed it, guide me, and challenged me to go to graduate school. So I went to Medical University of South Carolina, got my MHA, and had the opportunity to be exposed to Tenet's leadership development program. And that program took me all over the country to visit different markets. I had just went from vice president of business development to chief operating officer. I had told my CEO several months prior, I never saw myself in operations. I don't know if you were ever like that. I think you and I shared a little bit of that path.
For sure.
And he said, well, you really need to think about it. And I realized what I loved once I got into operations, what I loved about it was that the people that I had the opportunity to work with and learn from, I got the same type of joy from seeing them succeed and seeing them reach their goals that I did when I, recruited a physician and watched their practice grow. Mm-hmm. So I feel like healthcare is such a great opportunity because not only is it very worthwhile work with, saving people's lives and caring for people, but if you really enjoy seeing people work through complex problems and achieve goals together, it's one of the few we learned during COVID. It's one of the few specialties or disciplines where you don't have the opportunity to work from home. Like you have to be there because that's where your patients are.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I had the opportunity to become a CEO with Tenet after their leadership development program, moved to Southern California for the first time. And speaking of, Southern California has a really good contingent of Baylor Bears. There are a lot.
They did, right?
Yes. I went to some recruiting events in Southern California when I lived there. Moved to Arizona after that, led Tenet's flagship hospital there, Level 1 Trauma Program there. Uh-huh. And then was actually recruited out to Charleston, South Carolina by HCA. And about a year ago, I had a recruiter reach out to me about this opportunity with Sutter. So I'd been a hospital health system CEO for about 7 years and never really saw myself leaving the for-profit environment, but had the opportunity to visit Northern California, see Warner Thomas and Mark Sevco. Mark is my boss. He's the COO for the system. And, this is a 23-hospital integrated delivery system with 8 medical groups. Here in the San Francisco market, we have 3 hospitals in downtown, and then we have 3 hospitals all the way up toward wine country And I tell my friends, it's really hard to lead healthcare in wine country, but somebody has to do it.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah. So we have about 7,000 colleagues and about 400 physicians.
Okay.
And it has just been a great opportunity to see, you know, Warner's task is to take these separate holding companies and make them into one integrated health system. And I'm so glad that I was given the opportunity to take on the challenge, because I love California. I love the West Coast. I love healthcare in California, and it's been a great opportunity. So really That's happy to great. Be here.
That is just great. So you, a couple of things that you said that I want to talk about. Number one, mentorship. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's something. And before I moved to Waco, was in Dallas, Fort Worth in an ACHE, American College of Healthcare Executives, for those of you who don't know. But was president of the North Texas chapter. And one of the things that we did incredibly well was our mentorship program for, you know, students and emerging leaders. Talk a little bit about that impact that your mentors have had on you, because I know you had them early. I know you still do, right? We all should keep mentors in our career, regardless of what stage you're in. So talk a little bit about that.
You know, I think that one of the things that I reflect on about my mentors is how they had to have been so busy and have so much on their plates.
Yeah.
And when I look back on that, now that I've taken on, you know, a lot more responsibility in my career, the fact that they spent so much time, they would carve time out of their day, even impromptu. I mean, there were structured meetings, but they would carve time out of their day to give me time, let me kind of work through problems. They gave me challenges. One of my best mentors, who's currently, he's the CEO of Surgery Partners, Eric Evans. I think about him because Eric is the kind of person that most of us that have worked for him, we would run through a wall for him. He's what we call a hot coals leader. We'd walk over hot coals for him. But I also think the other thing that he did for me is he just gave me really good, honest feedback, even when it was feedback that I might not have wanted to hear at the time. And so I think giving time, giving honest feedback, and what I love about the mentors that I have today here at Sutter is that they've actually challenged us to go into our calendars and do an audit of our calendars. And they've asked us, how much time are you spending developing future leaders? How much time are you spending developing the team underneath you? And our performance review cycle is twice a year. And one of the key questions is, what have you done to make your team better?
Oh,
so I think that people realize it's a marathon, not a sprint. We're in it for the long haul. It's worthwhile work. But we have to be intentional about taking that next, you know, group of leaders and helping them be the best they can be. Yeah. Quint Studer, actually, he came to MUSC. And I'll never forget what he said. Somebody raised their hand when he was talking to our class and they said, how do I get a promotion? And he's like, it is the easiest thing in the world. And so everybody's like, you could hear a pin drop. Everybody's waiting to hear what he was going to say. And he's like, you get a promotion by being really good at the job that you currently have, not by doing somebody else's job or the job you think you want. Yeah. So I would say that's also really good advice, because I think especially in today's world, we see people that they get the degree, but sometimes they don't have the depth of experience and maturity to back it up. And so somebody that can just take a really mature lens and say, like, let's go ahead and throw you out there, watch you tread water, watch you learn to swim. I think that's important as well.
Yeah. Well, very good. Well, it's great that you mentioned Eric, because he's a friend of mine from Dallas. I've known Eric for a long time. And it just shows again what a small world healthcare is.
I would say that those of us that have worked closely with him we really would. We'd walk over hot coals for him.
He's just a super guy. And you talked about, because I kind of went through the same thing on the flip side. Earlier in my career, I started out in the not-for-profit side. And went to for-profit after saying I would never do it. Talk to me a little bit about your inverse of that, going from for-profit to not-for-profit.
You know, I think there are really good things in both environments. What I value the most about the for-profit background that I've been given is being brought up, being raised by people that have a strong discipline towards stewardship. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough to work with people that it wasn't always about, you know, cutting costs and cutting positions. It was about making the best use of what we had. And so that has been very helpful. I think that also making sure that, you know, I was extremely fortunate in both environments to have a lens about capital and building business cases for projects mm-hmm. that make a lot of sense. What's been really interesting as I move into the not-for-profit space is the role that responsible philanthropy can play in helping us do what we need to do for the community. Sure. And that's one of the things I've enjoyed the most about coming to Sutter. There's a very strong community benefit angle, and mm-hmm. The community needs analyses that we do where we look at social determinants of health in the communities where we work. Sure. We allow those gaps to guide where we donate money. Mm-hmm. And then we also work with philanthropy and our physicians. They've taught me since I arrived here 8 months ago that we need physicians with big visions of the programs they're trying to build, because that helps our potential donors see the impact that their dollars could have. So that's been a great opportunity just to see the intersection of community benefit and philanthropy in healthcare.
Yeah. You know, that's something that we really, we have a fantastic foundation here. And that's something that we really utilize is the physician component and really getting them, you know, on board and passionate about what they do and utilizing them to go out into the community and really help us promote the next level of care that we
yes.
want here in yeah. Central Texas.
It's neat when you see that a physician with a patient where they've been able to save that patient's life or change mm-hmm. the trajectory or the outcome of their life or the life of a family member. It's really neat to see that bond. And for people that have those resources, their willingness to try to put investment toward that physician's programming because they've seen firsthand what their talent yeah. can do. So it's a powerful driver for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about, you know, I'm at the stage in my career that I'm looking at, you know, succession planning. You know, I'm trying to, as you said, bringing up those leaders, you know, trying to empower them. What, yeah, I want to go back to what we talked about. How are you going about that now? I mean, for me, you know, I've got a lot, you know, some formal and informal mentees. You know, I proctor our MHA students from Baylor every year. I have my administrative resident that shadows me, poor kids, for 9 months every year. But tell me a little bit more about what you do, not only at Sutter, but I'm sure you're reaching out in other parts of the healthcare community, because I know people are calling you all the time. Hey, you know, how are you doing this?
So I think there's a couple of areas or a couple of directions we could take this. I think for succession planning, I think it is not making succession planning a one or two time a year thing, mm-hmm. but tying succession planning into results. And here's what I mean by that. So, you know, we all as hospital operators, as ambulatory operators, you know, we have metrics that we're driving toward to show and prove that we're doing a good job caring for patients. Mm-hmm. And what we've started to do in our market in San Francisco is really sit down with the hospital and ambulatory C-suites and talk with them about go deep into a department and ask them about their 9-box, their succession planning diagram for that department. Because we have also found, and it's funny, when I talk about this with physicians, like if we go to an MEC and we start talking about a 9-box, the physician's eyes will glaze over until you tell yeah. them that this is your protection against being without a good director if our director gets promoted or decides mm-hmm. to leave or decides to stay home and have a family. And then, we even get the physicians involved in that discussion.
Okay.
So how we've started to do it is we've tied operations and results focused conversations. First, we talk with the C-suite about what does your talent map look like in this department? Then we bring the actual directors and maybe the second level in the department in to hear how they're talking about results in the department. And then we immediately, our commitment to them is we immediately give them feedback, and we treat those directors as if they are sitting in front of the CEO of the company or the COO of the company, giving an operating review of their department. Mm-hmm. So I think it's involving it in everything, not making it an isolated thing. And then going ahead and setting that bar high that if the board, if you were in front of the board today, talking about your operations and results in the department, are you doing that in a way that builds confidence that you have an action plan and you're driving towards success? And some of the most difficult, but some of the most productive conversations come out of that, because you have the opportunity to see right away, not only do the directors have what it takes to move into the next role, but is the C-suite giving them that feedback and coaching? One of the things that I really appreciate about Warner Thomas, our CEO, is he is serious when he tells you he wants you to go one or two layers deep into your performance reviews. He wants you to see not just the performance review you've written, but the performance review you've written for your team underneath you. Because the clarity and how actionable that feedback is, I think, tell us how much we're set up for success as an organization. When it comes to mentorship, I have to be honest with you, that's something interns and fellows, I'm fortunate now to have two fellows and one intern that I work with. And it's something that I'm learning how to give them. Do I give them projects that are broad or projects that are deep? And a lot of times what helps me with that is how long they're going to be with me.
Right.
And also how specific they are coming into their time with me, knowing where they want to take their career next. That helps me to determine, going broad or going deep. The one requirement that I have for all of my my leaders is that they have to spend time on the ground in what I call the bowels of the hospital. So in plant operations and EVS, and nutrition, working side by side, part of their internship has to be working side by side with those team members and seeing the importance that it takes everybody serving together to care for a patient.
Boy, you've hit the nail on the head, because every year when our administrative resident comes, one of the first things that they do is spend a day in the laundry.
Yes.
And you know, we've got an amazing leader in our laundry who's a retired Marine, who is gruff, but his people love him. They get results. And at the end of every residency, each resident says, my favorite experience was the laundry.
Yeah.
And they carry that over into their careers. But you talked about something else too, you know, knowing what kind of project to give them. And so, you know, I just talked to them and say, look, you know, you can take your healthcare career in a lot of different ways. What are you thinking about now? What are you thinking about 5-10 years down the road? And so they'll give me some insight to that. And so, you know, we had our last resident did a great project on ED throughput.
Yes.
And really got into it, did some amazing work on that. Ended up, that is what put him over the top when he got his first job. They put him over, you know, administrative director for the ED for a very large hospital, because he had had that experience and because he had been so successful. And so, man, you know, it makes me proud as a dad, you know, that I actually saw, you know, that what they got out of this really translated into advancing their career. So, again,
good for you. I'm glad you do that for your team.
You know, I really, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. So I hate this. We only have a couple more minutes. I could talk to you for days. And so leave my audience with one or two nuggets that you want to share from your career, your life, whatever, just to kind of help us wrap up here.
Yeah. I'll share with you two lessons, one from the very beginning of my hospital career and then one from most recently. The first lesson that I learned. I was, when I took the first job that I had in healthcare, I took a step back financially in that first job. And what that taught me was that if it's the right role for you, don't worry about that initial step back, because it will, if your heart's in it, you'll pay it forward in spades, and it'll come back around to you. The second thing that I would share with people that are early careerists is when you find yourself leading people who are old enough to be your parent, and they are such subject matter experts, they've forgotten more stuff about their department than you'll ever learn. Figure out a way that you can become their student as well as their leader, because they will teach you a lot, not just about the subject, but about leadership. And then that leads to the bookend lesson. One of the things that I've appreciated so much about Sutter is that as they formed their new values, one of the values is curiosity. And this is a very real recent lesson for me. I, coming out of a different culture, I came into this role with what I thought was a very clear picture of what needed to happen, what needed to change in certain areas. And as I spent a little bit more time in the role, I realized that I needed to take a step back and be more curious. Number one, because if I didn't do that, I was going to end up looking like I was arrogant, and that's not how I wanted to come across. But number two, that type of curiosity, especially when you're new on the role, I'm at 8 months now, it takes the pressure off of you to feel like you have to come up with an answer to a question that might be a wrong answer if you approach it too quickly. And what I've done is to try to invite creativity from my team, ask more questions instead of just diving in with the answer. I think when you're new in a role, it's so tempting to want to show people that you got there for a reason and you know what you're talking about. And so I actually had a team member today thank me for, she saw that I did a reset, and she said, I just want to thank you for what you did, because I realized that it took a lot for you to step back and approach it differently. So those would be my three little nuggets for anyone that is moving into further responsibility with healthcare.
Excellent. Christina, can we talk again sometime down the road?
Yes, I would love that.
I mean, you know, I think you and I ought to just do a show every month. You know,
I have to say, as long as I can ask you the questions about Baylor athletics, I think we'll be good. I would enjoy that.
I'm happy to do that. Whatever it takes to get you on more, I would be more than happy to do that. Christina, it has been a distinct pleasure.
Thank you. You're my first podcast ever, what? Kevin. Yes.
Who is that?
You're my first one. So I would be happy to join you. Sick 'em Bears.
All right. Folks, what a great day. I hope you enjoyed it. Christina and I, we're going to take this on the road, I think. You may see us. Just look for us, at a venue near you, I think. So anyway, audience, thanks for joining me today on I Don't Care with me, Kevin Stevenson. We'll see you again next week. Take care.